All right, Davey, thanks for your service today. And Kendra, thanks so much for being the timer, and also thanks for asking me to share today. And I want to thank Blythe for being my sponsor. She's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful human being. The Buddha of 12 steps. So I feel really good right now. I'm really relaxed. I'm super chilled out. Got to go back to work tomorrow, but I've been going through a cold for the last week. I usually don't sound like this. Hate suffering. I just hate suffering. But I feel real good right now. And it's interesting. I was talking to my sponsor on Friday. That's when we do our weekly hour session. And we kind of broke into the whole topic of suffering and what it means and why does it, why does suffering happen? Why do we, we came into the program, I read the promises. The promises look great. I'm sober for almost 39 years now, and I'm off of sugar, which was my big thing. I belong here, believe me. I had to get a divorce from two people. I had to get a divorce from Ben, and I had to get a divorce from Jerry. Because they were the answer to my problem for a very, very long time. But even after you get sober and you get abstinent and then you work your program and you do the steps and you do all the stuff that they tell you to do, shit happens. And you get your heart broken, somebody dies, you get in a car accident. Things happen, and you don't know why. It's just why do these things happen to me? So I guess the first thing that I really come to understand, because I've been doing this, as far as suffering is concerned, I mean, I came into my first 12-step meeting on the beverage side in 1984. It's a really long time ago. And I got sober in 88. So I've been doing this for a long, long time, and I know for sure that I would not be the same person talking right now if I hadn't come into this program, and how incredibly valuable it is. But just talking about I mean, I guess the big message that I wanted to talk about today, as far as that subject of suffering, is that they say that this is a program of identification. It's a disease of isolation. So they don't say it's a disease of food. They don't say it's a disease of cigarettes. Don't say it's a disease of alcohol. They just say it's a disease of isolation. And what I've come to understand that to mean is that there were certain things that happened to me as a child and as a teenager that were incredibly traumatizing and damaging to me, that made me feel horrible about who I was as a person. And so it wasn't specifically about me hiding in my bedroom or hiding in a closet or not wanting to spend time with other people, which you think of isolation. When I think of isolation, I think of the fact that I had to create a false person. I had to become someone else that I was convinced that other people would like. And that was the only way that I was going to get by. And that worked. And that worked very, 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 very well, until it didn't. And then things got worse and worse and worse. And, that mask ends up eating you alive. And for me, that mask was also about alcohol. It was also about sugar. It was also about food, because it wasn't who I was, And so when they talk about this program being a program of identification, is that there's nothing in this program that says that I have to be a good person in this program. It's a good idea. It doesn't say that I have to be empathetic with other people's problems. It doesn't say that I have to be compassionate with other people's problems. I just need to identify with what they went through and why they abuse the food and why they abuse the substance. And that's the biggest, most miraculous thing that ever occurred to me. and how I'm able to sit here and be able to talk today is because that identification thing is that, I was, when I first went to my first meeting, it was down on the bottom of Manhattan in New York City on Wall Street. I was a banker, and I walked down these steps, that typical thing that you hear about those AA meetings, and it was at the bottom of this building. I think it was a church or some rectory. It might have been some place where the priests live. And somebody had mentioned that, if you're having problems drinking, it was some Irish guy, go to this AA meeting. And I'm like, okay, I was up for anything. So I go down there, and it was one of those meetings where you have the podium up front and you got those rows of chairs. I don't know if anybody has been to one of those meetings. And then you have the 12 steps on one side of the front wall, and then the traditions on the other side of the front wall and the podium. And I was just really awestruck. I was awestruck when I walk into the meeting, because the first thing I saw was this guy with a three-piece suit, dressed to the nines. And he was like talking to this like janitor guy who actually had a broom next to him, And the janitor's like animatedly talking to this guy in the three-piece suit. And it seemed like the three guy in the three-piece suit was actually listening to what the janitor had to say. Like he was counseling him, And then there was these bunch of, I mean, I remember it vividly, and that there was these other women. One woman was crying and the other women were counseling them. There was a construction worker. He was off on the side talking to somebody else. I mean, it was just this really, really amazing atmosphere where all of these people from a different walk of life, all dressed differently, of different shapes and sizes, just was there together in a very loving and generous and wonderful way in order to celebrate something. And I didn't know what the hell it was about, because I'm here about drinking. I came here because I want to quit drinking. What's going on? And in fact, I have to be honest with you that I didn't really listen to much that was being said. I knew people were talking in unison, which is kind of weird, like just like it was in church, like they would say things and repeat things. And I read the steps and the traditions, and it all seemed really, really weird to me. But I got to tell you something, halfway through that meeting, I knew I was home. That was it for me. I was signed on. You got me. Because I realized that, like, the things that take place in this meeting, the things that are being done in this meeting, is so unlike, like saying an apple and an orange comparison to what goes on in the outside world. And this is exactly what I needed, And they talk so much about that family of origin and then, creating your own adult family. And this was my solution. This was my solution. But it didn't mean that my life was going to get radically better, and it did. I had some crazy shit happen to me over the next 20 years, but the point of the matter is that difficult things still happened to me, but I was still able to do them sober. I was still able to do them sober and learn from them and be of value to other people, to be value of other people. So I guess for me, the one thing I wanted to talk about on that was the fact that that the solution comes from me not being by myself. And the solution comes from me being able to be honest and truthful and humble, to be able to say that, I've made a lot of mistakes. I've done a lot of things that were wrong to myself. I've done a lot of things that were wrong to other people. And a lot of it had to do with my upbringing. But a lot of it had to do with things that I'd decided to do that I felt were best for me. And because I was so screwed over so many times, that I'm just going to do the things the way I want to do them, when I want to do them, and how I want to do them. And I don't care what anybody else thinks. And that was just as bad as some of the shit that happened to me when I was younger, And so it's a wonderful thing going through the steps with somebody who is the right person for me, to discover all these things about myself that I possibly couldn't recognize on my own. So the steps are really, really, really amazing. And I guess, how am I on time, Kendra?
You have 10 minutes left.
Yeah, okay. So the next thing I want to talk about is that I love this meeting so much. And you know what I like about this meeting, I mean, honestly, it's my favorite of all the 12-step meetings and all the OA meetings, or however you want to describe it. This is my favorite meeting of all. And I guess what separates this meeting more so than any other meeting, and I'm hoping the newcomers can hear me on this, is that there's just this huge heart. Like this meeting has a huge, incredible, warm heart to it. And it's very, very welcoming. It's very, very open. And they don't care who or what you've done. They don't care who or what you've done. They want you to be here, and you are just as important as everyone else. And that shocked the shit out of me. Because I'll tell you, I've gone to a bunch of meetings. I've been doing this since 1984. Give me a break. This is just a really, really special place. They don't have a good judge of character because they asked me to share, but other than that, it's a really, really nice place. So the reason I brought that up is that I had the luck of being on a meeting last week. I had the luck of being on a meeting last week, and we were talking about this guy that is a jaywalker. There's a guy that's a jaywalker, and this. Because jaywalking's crazy, right? It doesn't make any sense. Like, why would anybody want to walk in front of cars? And so the guy kept on getting hit by a car, and he broke an ankle, then he broke his neck, and then, but anyway, ultimately the guy can't stop jaywalking and running in front of vehicles that he eventually gets paralyzed for life. And so the obvious message is that if we don't stop eating, it's going to hurt us and could eventually kill us if we don't watch what we're doing. But the thing for me is I'm kind of a strange ranger, and I just think about, like, what is it about this jaywalker? Why? What is the why of it? Why did this happen to the jaywalker? And my imagination starts going up with me, and I could see this kid, like, when he's 15 years old or 16 years old, in some middle American city walking down the sidewalk after school with his friends. And he's with six or seven of his buddies, and they're all having a good time. And he feels totally alone. He likes his friends, and he knows his friends like him, but he just doesn't feel loved. He doesn't feel like anybody pays attention to him. His father's a drunk, his mother's totally into her own mind. So he gets this crazy idea. He says, "Guys, watch this, watch this." And so his friends watch him, and he runs out into the road, and he barely misses one car. And then he goes, and another car is coming the other direction. And he barely misses them. And he gets to the other side of the street, and he's alive. He survived. He went through the traffic. And I can't imagine what the chemicals were like going on in his brain. He was completely exhilarated by what had happened. And also, his friends were on the other side of the street with their mouths wide open, like, "Oh my God." So I call this guy Jimmy the Jaywalker, like, "Oh my God, Jimmy, what have you done? You are a madman." And all of a sudden, he's got all the attention. He has all of the attention that he ever asked for. That they are so amazed at what he has done. And he's as high as a kite. And he's never going to forget that incident. And he goes back to school the next day, and everybody are talking about how Jimmy almost died, and he's a wild man, he's all popular. So he does it again. And he does it again. And he does it in college. And people start to think that he's really, really weird. He can't stop doing it, And his fiance refuses to marry him if he doesn't stop walking and running in front of cars. And so he does it for 6 months. They get married. He does it again. So I guess my point is that we needed to find something. I needed to find something to be my higher power. I needed something to make me feel real. I needed something to make me feel real. Because, for whatever reason, you can call it lack of a higher power, self-esteem, whether it's psychological or spiritual, whatever it was, that there was something really, really, really missing in my life that I needed to find. And so I couldn't give up the substance, and it defined me. It eventually defines me as a human being. The substance defines me as a human being. And that's a tough thing to get rid of, that addiction, you know. And that, I'll be honest with you, I don't think anything else works except for this program. And I'll also say to, what's that, 2 minutes?
5 minutes.
Oh, shit. So I personally, and people can disagree, it doesn't matter, that there's only one way to get sober, and that's through this program. And abstinence, same thing. I don't think anything else works. Pills, shots, talk therapy, shock therapy. This is the only thing that works for me. And I believe that it's the only thing that works for real recovery, for real recovery, not a band-aid recovery, but for real recovery. Because they also say it's, program of identification, disease of isolation, that it's not about the food. It's about the food, but it's not about the food. And they say that it's a disease that started on the inside. It's a disease that started on the inside and made its way outside into a substance. And so the recovery is going to come from the outside in. But that recovery has got to be some type of a spiritual approach. And this is the greatest spiritual program that I've ever, because I do a lot of research. This is the greatest that I've ever found. So, and I guess the last thing I want to say is that they talk about the fact that that abstinence, to be able to put down the food, is a gift. They say that it's a gift, and like, what does that mean? And I can say what it means for me is that, like, I haven't had sugar in 2.5 years. It took me 20 friggin' years to get 2.5 years. And from one day to the next, I just haven't had the desire to go buy ice cream or brownies or sugar or anything. And I don't know why. I am as far from perfect as you could possibly be. But I was lifted. I was lifted. But let me tell you something. It still got me scared in the fact that I'm going to come to these damn meetings and I'm going to share my shit. I'm going to share my shit with other people. And I'm going to want to talk to them and I'm going to work the steps and I'm going to do what I can. But at least I don't have some bad thing happen to me. And the first thing I think about is picking up sugar. I'm going to call some people. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to reflect on it in the car. I'm going to write about it, but I'm not going to pick up sugar. So I guess I would just close on the fact that the program doesn't make me happy 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. That's not what it's all about. I'm still going to suffer. It doesn't matter. I'm still going to suffer. Shit's going to happen. But I'm going to take an approach
2 minutes.
Thank you. I'm going to take an approach to the good things and the bad things in my life with a much more intelligent, balanced approach and decide what is the best path for me to take given the circumstances that I'm in. So I'm going to take a much, much more calm and reflective approach to what's going on in my life right now. And in some respects, I do want to be hopelessly and helplessly in love with other people. I don't want to have a balanced approach to the things that I know are good and that can make me better. I don't want to be a robot. I want to have my emotions available to me. But the program allows me to know the right approach before I jump headlessly, helplessly, and hopelessly into a stupid situation. And that's all I got. But I love you guys very much, and thanks for letting me share today.